Thank you. It's great to have technical assistance from the audience. But let me ask if anyone here is a healthcare provider for women in obstetrics in particular, sort of maternity care. Anyone? Okay. Anyone with a special interest in women's healthcare? Okay. Good. And how about endocrinology or diabetes care? Especially. Great. Okay. I think it's interesting that my presentation is last in a way because it is. I'm going to demonstrate what I call in other contexts the perfect storm of how care transition is not happening. So I think it gives us an opportunity maybe to think about how some of the lessons, especially of the first two presentations of interventions, might work in this scenario. So gestational diabetes, or GDM as I'll call it, we're using as a case study of failure modes and opportunities for innovation. I have no financial disclosures and no slide that says such. These are my collaborators, all from BU, medicine, and public health. They include some student fellows, as well as Dr. Lee Peretz and Iverson, who are obstetricians and specialists in diabetes. So I'm going to give some big picture context to the presentation, then get to our studies, one kind of a quick look at a quantitative analysis that we did, followed by the main purpose of my study is to share in-depth analysis of our qualitative work with patients and providers, and then really this is a call for innovation in this care transition of women's health from pregnancy to primary care. So I don't know if I can argue this, but I want to argue that it is among the most common care transitions in our system. We have 3.9 million babies born every year, and every time a birth happens, a woman has to transfer or transition first to postpartum care and then take the leap to her ongoing primary care after a period in which the focus has been almost entirely on her baby and the outcome of his or her birth. So we have a scenario of risk, high risk, and high opportunity. This gestational diabetes happens in the context, as we know, of large epidemics in obesity and diabetes. The good news is we're in the midst in women's care of a shift to really taking a life course perspective. Theoretically, now we have to make the system work that way. We're in the midst of policy changes that could serve our purpose, particularly the shift to population health and creation of medical homes. And then we're in the process, of course, of, we hope, much improved IT innovations. So I framed this today as a failure mode analysis, so that made me have to look up what it meant. And here's the definition, which I think suits our purposes. Process of collecting, analyzing data to determine the cause of failure. And I'll show you what the specific failure is that we looked at. It relies on collecting failed components for subsequent examination and using a wide array of methods. So we have used both microscopy and the big picture spectroscopy. So here's the big picture look. Rapid rise in type 2 diabetes among women. And interestingly, and this was news to me, 30% of women first diagnosed were first diagnosed with GDM during a pregnancy. So it's a big chunk. GDM is, if you don't know, the first onset of carb intolerance during pregnancy. So we know it's not only a complication of pregnancy, but it's a harbinger of future risk to quite an astounding level. It's a low prevalence condition. Its rate is rising, and underrepresented minority women are up to 2 times more likely to have GDM than white women. And the disparities, of course, reflect the sister epidemics, which in some way is driving the trend upward, obesity and diabetes. What's really important and maybe missing here, actually, is a linchpin of this whole argument. 60% of women with GDM go on to develop type 2 diabetes over the next 10 years. In some ways, we consider pregnancy to be the stress test for type 2 diabetes. Postpartum testing, which is to occur in the first weeks after the birth, is a gateway to lifelong prevention. At least that's what the professional clinical guidelines assume. So both the ADA and ACOG published guidelines now long ago, over a decade ago, that say at 6 to 12 weeks, every woman with GDM should have a test, especially they should have the oral glucose tolerance test. And then after that, if every woman with GDM during pregnancy should be tested every 3 years. And if she had a positive test or one that looked a little borderline, she should be tested every year. So that's what providers should do. We all know that dissemination of guidelines doesn't necessarily mean behavior change or practice change among providers. ACOG fellows, in a survey quite a while ago, reported they knew that routine postpartum testing should be done by and large, but only just over a third used the preferred test. Family medicine, however, who also do deliveries and do ongoing care, were much less familiar with the guidelines or even that highly increased risk for women with gestational diabetes. So actual testing rates are very, very low, no matter what setting you look at. And this has been looked at quite exhaustively. But the lowest rates, of course, are among the highest risk groups. There have been large cohort studies. There have been clinical-based studies. And essentially between 34 and 73%. It's a wide range. Get follow-up testing. But at the group I'm most interested in are women who are most likely to have gestational diabetes and most likely to have type 2 diabetes, low-income, underrepresented minority women. So our center and San Francisco General are the only two, really, that have dug deep in those groups. In our center, we found 80% of women came for the postpartum visit, which is very high and encouraging, and only 23% received any glucose tolerance test, even if you give them 6 months out. And only 7% the recommended test. So these are our quantitative findings, or the spectroscopy look. So very, very discouraging, and prompted, of course, our study. I do want to say that the way we understood what we learned, especially, is that some contact with the healthcare system is better than none, because we found one of the best predictors was having seen your PCP in that first year. That's no big surprise. But a postpartum visit is definitely not sufficient. But even if you see your postpartum provider in that year following your birth, only 38% received any diabetes, any glucose tolerance test at all. So why? What goes wrong? Well, we know from other care transition studies that, and I look especially to Zopka's really wonderful meta-analysis of using abnormal PAP follow-ups, abnormal mammography follow-up care, to come to the grand conclusion after her meta-analysis that we have to understand all levels of care when a test is done and involves and happens or should happen during a care transition, and that we have to look at systems, patients, and providers, of course, and have, therefore, multi-pronged strategies. So GDM, this is a kind of flow chart that I just want to highlight what a complex process it is, how many transitions there are really in the care of women with GDM, as well as their follow-up after birth. Starts at diagnosis, goes through postpartum care, primary care, and of course the red shots show you where the disconnects happen. Everywhere. First patient is diagnosed, so that has to do with how she's diagnosed, how she is told and made to understand the condition. She follows then with a variety of management strategies with many different providers, which you'll see through our qualitative work. She then gives birth and is discharged into an uncertain future, where she might or might not receive any follow-up at all from this pregnancy complication. So the qualitative findings I'm going to share are from the first phase of an NICHD-funded R21 study to really try to understand and then pilot test an intervention of these low postpartum testing rates and follow-up to primary care. So we were able to interview patients and providers about their experience with this condition to try to understand. And the phase two, I'm not going to share, we're still in the throes of a small randomized controlled trial of an MI, motivational interviewing intervention, that uses doulas to provide motivational interview at the time of diagnosis of GDM following her and encouraging the use of talking to her provider about the condition and her future risk beyond that of her infant. We're aiming for 30 in each category. We're almost there. You can see our languages that we were able to, which very well represent our population at Boston Medical Center, where we are, and a whole variety of maternity care providers, those involved on the team. We have interviewed some of each. So some of the themes. I won't talk too much about methods. I'm glad to if there are questions afterwards. But these were interviews with women that took up to an hour, very in-depth about her life circumstances and then her reflections on her experience with GDM as well as postpartum care. They were all within 5 months of having had their birth after GDM. And the providers were more like 20-minute interviews, sometimes 5 minutes, but mostly about 15 or 20 minutes, about how they manage and some examples of how they have talked to patients about GDM and what they know if they're a primary care provider. So we thought it was really important to look at all across the process of care, from diagnosis to management to testing and transitioning. And these are just some of the major pop-out themes that I will illustrate with some quotes that capture it. So diagnosis turns out really to be important. We found out through, if you look forward to the transition that have how a woman comes to understand or how a provider communicates the diagnosis. And providers across the board talk to us about what a balancing act it is to know how to juggle this really big and latent pregnancy diagnosis, to juggle what they know to be a woman's concerns about too much information and perhaps some fear she might have about getting such a big deal diagnosis and all the life changes she has to make. Balancing that, communicating risk with wanting to reassure her at this very sensitive time toward the end of her pregnancy where her major concerns are about her baby. And his or her major concerns, it turns out, are about the baby. Managing GDM is wrought with problems inherent in having a team without a manager. Nutritionists, endocrinologists, sometimes specialists, case managers, the obstetrician or nurse midwife, who's talking to whom? Postpartum testing, well, you know what? It's the wrong test, that is the preferred oral glucose tolerance, at the wrong time, postpartum, when the woman's life is most complex. And there are many competing priorities for providers. Things to talk to the patient about at that time. And then transitioning, how do you get the results? Even if she has the test or not, how do you get any information to the primary care provider, even though you have a medical record system and the ability to flag patients? We'll see that doesn't always work. So let me highlight some of the quotes. I'm not going to go through all of them. This is a CNM reflecting on how this risk versus reassurance issue. I think we may be part of it, that we maybe simplify it so they don't see it as they're just glad, oh, it's not going to kill my baby, right? Others are a little more reflective of how important it is to point to future risks. So this is an opportunity for you to make some modifications to prevent what you're expressing concern about. So this was a biggie. What this provider, an OB, saying, I haven't had specific training to do that, quote, nutrition counseling. And a lot of our patients' diets are rice-based, so that's just recognizing it's like eating a bowl of sugar is a huge thing, and that takes time to talk with them about. So the nutritionist goes through alternatives or options, portion control, exercise. I never have time to go over that. And what others have said is then they don't talk to each other. They may give multiple referrals, but we aren't good at figuring out on the menu of items a patient needs to make sure they get the information they absolutely need that day from the provider. And the clinic volumes are going up with increased numbers, so it's even harder. The wrong test at the wrong time. I'm just going to summarize this idea. So a postpartum test is supposed to happen at 12 weeks. Well, if she comes for the postpartum visit, providers tell us that's great, but then she has to come back having fasted for a OGTT later. That is not going to happen. And so it really just falls through the cracks of what's really postpartum visit post-care, when a woman has many, many other concerns, and the providers do as well. And it's a terrible test to have to order and to take, as many of us know. It's exponentially more difficult to arrange than a 1 hour, that is the 2 hour, especially when people have babysitters, a lot of people do, and they're taking public transportation, facing many demands to even get health care, let alone come back for such a horrible lab test. And these are all the kinds of competing issues providers have. So, and I think when it gets to the transition, the key take-home message is this from as an OB. That's part of not being the PCP. You're not really following up closely. You're just like, we're done. She had the baby. And they describe flagging that they flag the PCP with test results if the woman has it, and they just don't get read. What I want to be sure to get to before wrapping up is the extent to which the women's interviews revealed to us how much her concerns mirror that those of the provider. And you really begin to see the whole complicated picture. In fact, women receiving the diagnosis, it prompts a lot of fear. These are women who have seen the ravages of diabetes in their families. And, okay, maybe deal with it for my baby during pregnancy, but I really don't want to hear that I'm at risk in the future. Confusion and overwhelm with all the different people you're having to see at this late stage of your pregnancy, and postpartum testing isn't a priority. And when you finally get to your PCP, there's a sense of relief. So that's kind of the big picture. Here are a few quick quotes illustrating their own, recognition that of how fearful they were. I have an uncle that just passed away about a year or so ago, so it's kind of difficult. this can't be, because since I had the experience with my sister-in-law, it was like I'm underweight. I can't eat two portions, but I can eat two portions of rice a day, and I like rice. It was just all so confusing. You know, Asian women in particular have a high risk, and that's particularly confusing to them. We're not exactly sure why. And the test doesn't make sense because you're asked to eat sugar, as she says. How can you give somebody sugar to drink and then you're going to have to test it? That means they're going to find the sugar. So again, sort of a bad test. And it's not a priority. I didn't have time to take a shower. How can I get a blood test? And yeah, I have something heavy and I throw it now. So they reflect each other's challenges. This is kind of this has a dual meaning. It's both a little bit of the storm left over, the storm theme, but just showing you the specific ways that the themes seem to reflect each other. So there are provider and patient challenges. They interact and self-perpetuate each other, it seems. They're interpersonal. How they communicate with each other about this complicated condition, with each other, patient-provider, and provider-to-provider. They're technical, the actual test, what it requires to prepare for it and do it. And then there are systems challenges, which include the medical record as being the main route to transfer information and its failure. It's over provider sense of overwhelm, as well as discharge, both the point of discharge from birth and discharge from the OB setting. There's really no mechanism to highlight GDM or other complications and their importance for the woman's future. So this is just a quick look at some of our future next steps that we're pursuing. We're thinking about putting something in women's hands that is a mobile app for herself to be the bridge in lieu of a system that isn't yet working for her, to communicate information to her PCP as well as to herself. Providers gave us, there's all kinds of things we all know we can do, and many of which Heather, you especially pointed to in that kind of comprehensive systems approach to improving a transition. From a systems perspective, I want to highlight that despite all the attention to patient-centered medical homes, there is no such thing that I know of, certainly not in Boston, let me know if you know of something, that is a home for women that spans pregnancy care and primary care, which seems to me an OB-GYN and internal medicine, family medicine imperative. Thank you.
Could you turn back to the last one?
Sure.
No, you can't now, right? Did it go forward or something? Oh,
this one?
Yeah, that's what
I actually know how to do that. Yes. Insurance, including in our, I mean, most of ours is Medicaid, not only, but yes. Yes. That does not seem to be an issue. Yeah.
Was there any program that you noted in your research that helps patients prepare when they're pregnant, prepare for, you know, these different types of basic testing so that they can already process it before?
Right. Well, that is what we're trying to do, and others, a little bit in the literature, you see it, with motivational interviewing with doulas who are working with her anyway to really bring up this issue of her own health and begin to encourage that kind of ownership of the implications for herself and then specifically the test and why it's important, and then give her booster calls So they meet with her when she's diagnosed and then give booster calls at the time of test? Could even accompany her to the test? Yes. Preconception care, right? That is, you know, I'm an MCH person, so that is the model on paper, and that is what preconception care visits are about. And so I think that actually can happen. You're right, and it's a really important thing to emphasize. I think it has to span, though, across this period, this bridge period, to her ongoing care. I mean, that's really what we're talking about, women's ongoing care. Our focus is so honed in at pregnancy. And so that's the paradigm. It's a matter of creating the system that, until ACA, low-income women were not covered anymore after 60 days. That's a problem we hope is largely getting solved.